The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Pamela Wilson, author of Master Content Marketing, and you're listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in modern marketing. And don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Also, if you're listening to the show right now and you're not driving or operating dangerous machinery, please hop on Twitter and tell us where in the world you're listening from. My Twitter handle is marketingbook. Today, we're joined by Pamela Wilson, and we're going to talk about her new book, Master Content Marketing, A Simple Strategy to Cure the Blank Page Blues and Attract a Profitable Audience. Pamela Wilson's career began on the visual side of the marketing business. She's an award-winning graphic designer and marketing consultant. In 2010, she founded Big Brand System, and she began creating content marketing to reach the audience she wanted to build. Pamela's a 30-year marketing veteran who spent over 2 years as the executive vice president of educational content for Rainmaker Digital, publishers of Copyblogger. And she is a big fan of Pablo Picasso. Pamela, congratulations on Master Content Marketing and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
And you live in Nashville, right?
I do. I live in Nashville. It's such a great city. I moved here about 2.5 years ago. Love it here.
Oh, great. It's a great town, and I've gotten to know more about it. My daughter is a freshman in college about an hour away from there, so we're always going in and out of Nashville, and it's terrific.
It is an amazing city, and there are a lot of people doing some really cool stuff here. I moved here from Pennsylvania, where I would tell people I had an online business, and I would watch their eyes glaze over. And here, you talk to people, and they all kind of get it. Oh, online. Yeah, online is an interesting place. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you worked for Copyblogger, and I saw that your foreword to the book was written by Brian Clark. So, of course, when I first found out about your book and that you'd worked at Copyblogger and the foreword was by Brian Clark, it's like you had me at hello. And, you know, he wrote the foreword for at least two other books that have been on this show, one for Joe Polizzi's Content Inc. and one for John Jantz's and Phil Singleton's book, SEO for Growth.
Yes. Yes, he did. He write. I mean, that foreword was, it just kind of blew me away when I read it. So it was very generous of him to write what he did, and I so appreciated it.
Yeah. So now you didn't start out as a writer. You were a graphic designer, and then you learned all of this about how to, you know, perfect the art of content marketing. You learned quite a bit. I need to back up in the acknowledgments. You thanked your husband, Jim. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then at the beginning of the book, you talk about how you weren't really what you would consider a writer until 2010, and that, you know, the longest text you'd ever written were love letters to former boyfriends. And I was just wondering how Jim felt about that.
He did ask me about that. That's funny you mention it. He was like, what is this love letters to old boyfriends? And I'm like, this is way, because we haven't been married that long. And I said, oh, that's way before your time, because that was before email. So that was a long time ago.
Pamela, so that was the correct answer.
I didn't know what else to say. So that was the first thing that popped to mind.
But yeah.
He and I did plenty of writing back and forth when we were dating. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, you just never know where your mind's going to go. And I guess that may have been a surprise to you. You never know what your readers are going to pick up on, especially when I started at the back of the book and read the acknowledgments. And then I started at the beginning and I thought, oh, boy, we're in for an adventure here.
Yeah, that's the only place in the book that I mention old boyfriends. So
okay, it's true.
But it drew you in. This is good.
There you go.
Job, you know, it's like the first sentence. I mean, I talk about the first sentence in the book, so that's like, you know, you got to pull people into what you're writing, right?
So. Yeah, there you go. So let me just read a quick excerpt. It's from Brian Clark's introduction, and he talked about, you know, the concept of building an audience earlier in the foreword. And then your book, which is Master Content Marketing, A Simple Strategy to Cure the Blank Page Blues and Attract a Profitable Audience, he says, the title of the book reveals three important aspects of content marketing that works. The first of these is audience, which we've touched on. Content marketing is not about campaigns. They are really poorly disguised pitches. You create the right kind of content that attracts the right kind of audience, resulting in more customers and clients. Next is the word strategy. Research on content marketing effectiveness shows that the people who struggle with it have no documented strategy whatsoever. Reading this book will immediately put you on the right track because you'll understand exactly what you're trying to accomplish before creating a single piece of content. And finally, the third important word is simple. No respectable book on content marketing would claim that it's easy. You're effectively becoming a media producer with a smart content strategy, and that takes work. So you mentioned in the book, at the beginning of the book, Pamela, that if you're not a writer, this book is for you. Explain why that is.
I was inspired to write this book because I knew how I felt back in 2010 when I was starting my website. I had this idea that I wanted to create this thing called content marketing. I did not feel like a writer. I mean, in my business up until that point, I would work with clients, help them figure out their marketing strategy. I would do all the visual piece of their solution, and then I would hire a writer to do the writing. I never did the writing myself. So this idea that I would be doing the writing myself and then publishing it in a place where everyone could see it, I mean, it just was incredibly daunting to me. So that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because I wanted to help people like me who understood that content marketing was powerful. And I think most people have gotten that message at this point. They know what it is. They understand it in general terms. But I just kept meeting people who were saying things like, I know what it is. I know it's powerful. How do I get started? They just did not even know where to start and how to do it effectively over time. So what I wanted to spell out was the things that I had managed to figure out in those years since I started using it on my own website.
So, but for those who, you know, may be new to this, explain, let's back up a bit, talk a bit about content marketing. Explain what you mean when you say old marketing is dead.
When I got into marketing, it was really about pushing messages out on an unsuspecting and unwilling audience, right? So wherever you went,
it worked beautifully.
Well, it worked beautifully, but it was very expensive and it was annoying as heck. You know, it was really annoying to be on the receiving end of all those messages. Don't you remember the days that we would go to our mailboxes and take out this, you know, inch and a half thick stack of postcards and mailers and brochures and, you know, newsletters that companies were sending us. It was just, we were being pushed with these messages all the time, all over the place. And that still happens to a certain extent. But nowadays, what happens more often is the consumer themselves or the business person themselves has the power to go out and look for information about the topic they're interested in. And that's what content does. It delivers that information. So instead of pushing out these messages, you're kind of pulling people toward your business. And that's why I truly think the old way of marketing is dead. Any company that is not incorporating content marketing as part of their marketing efforts is losing out, really. They're focused on old school methods that tend to annoy people rather than actually serve them.
No truer words said. And one of my favorite lines from the book is you say, content marketing is like putting out bait rather than throwing a spear.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And the idea is you want to get those consumers or those business people to swim toward your business. Because if you are there from a position of service, serving them up with the information in a format that's engaging and easy to read and fulfills whatever need they come to your doorstep with, right? If you deliver that to them, then, I mean, you've got them. You've got them. They swim right into your business and they want to interact with you. You're able to build a lot of trust with them. It's like, you know how we used to talk about in marketing, warming up the customer, you know, you want to have a warm relationship, and content marketing provides that warmth. And people are basically providing it for themselves. They're swimming toward the fire and warming themselves up. Just to mix our metaphors completely here.
That's right. And actually, there's one part in the book where you were explaining, you were showing there was one example where you had somebody, you were saying, this is what not to do. And you had like two metaphors in one sentence. And you said, now this is an easier way to write that.
Yes.
Let's talk about the lazy, efficient approach to content creation. And boy, were you talking to me when you talk about being lazy and efficient, especially lazy. What is this lazy, efficient approach to content creation?
I have to tell you, I actually thought about calling the book Lazy Content Marketing, and I tested that title.
Oh, really?
And oh, yeah. And people were so passionate about it. They, you know, some people loved it. They were like, oh, lazy. I would sign up right away for anything that taught me the lazy approach to doing this stuff, because it's a lot of work, right?
Uh-huh.
But then other people were like, I would never aspire to be lazy. People were very passionate one way or another. So I ended up going with Master Content Marketing, but I definitely feature lazy pretty prominently in the book, right?
So, yeah, and I can understand also maybe as the book title, it might be...
Might be too much.
Well, it might be an overpromise, because it's not something like falling off the couch.
Oh, this, yeah, no. And
this
I'm
content
kind of,
marketing.
I mean, I'm using lazy kind of ironically, but the idea is I had to develop this process for creating content, because at the time that I was first creating content, which at the beginning, you know, the early days of doing any new skill, the skill is just going to take you longer because you haven't developed proficiency at it. So it just takes longer to create. So my early pieces of content took me much longer to create, and I did not have massive blocks of time to devote to this. So what I did is I realized that each piece of content has 7 basic sections. And as long as I knew what I was trying to accomplish in each of those sections, I could put together the component parts and create a piece of content that would deliver. And then I also realized that if I would spread out the creation process over several days, and I just didn't have a massive block of time to devote to creating content. So that was never an option. But, you know, people talk about, oh, I need 5 or 6 hours to write a post. Well, I mean, you don't have to have all those hours on the same day. So that's what I figured out, was if I tackled different aspects of the piece of content on different days and spread them out, it was much easier for me to get the content created. It felt lazy because honestly, it felt so effortless. But the other thing that was surprising to me is that the content generally was better quality if I had given it some time to sit in between these different phases that I was using to get it written.
So when I hear somebody say, I don't have 6 hours for that, I better understand that's actually not a good idea. It's like cramming for a test the night before an exam. And you explain that, as well as some of the folks that contributed to parts at the very end of the book where you interview them. A lot of them are affirming that, where they say, no, you've got to spread it out. You've got to let it marinate for a while. But let me ask about something else before we go into these different sections that you frame the book with. You recommend, at least for restaurants, not adding tacos to a sushi menu. Explain the concept of using categories before developing your content.
I thought this was a really interesting way because, you know, people, the one complaint I hear a lot or confusion I hear a lot is, I don't know what to write about. I don't know what my audience wants to read. And people start writing and then they end up getting off track. So they start writing a blog or they start a podcast about a certain topic, and then they find themselves kind of wandering off and exploring these other topics. And what happens is the audience listening or reading gets very confused because they can't figure out what this thing is about, right? So this is the tacos on the sushi menu or the sushi in the Italian restaurant. I mean, people, you know, open that up and they're like, where am I? And there's no way that they can do both of those things well. This is either a sushi restaurant that, by the way, has pizza, or it's a Mexican restaurant that, you know, there's somebody in the back who likes sushi, so they stuff that on a menu. But it ends up eroding trust.
And I'm still not going to trust the sushi.
Exactly.
At an Italian restaurant.
Right, exactly. So that you don't want to do that on your site. You want to make sure that you deliver a cohesive message that says, this is what you'll find here. This is what I am delivering to you. This is what I'm good at. This is what you'll learn. And the way you do that is to have content that fits into these general categories. And the other thing that I see people do is they end up creating, you know, 70 categories on their website. And at that point, categories are not that useful anymore. It's like the diner menu that has, you know, 24 pages and you can't figure out what to eat because there are just way too many things to choose from. So I recommend that people come up with a core group of categories. If they're starting a brand new site, that they come up with a core group of categories and start writing things to fit into those categories. But the other thing that you can do is to look at your categories and think about a piece of content that would be combining two of those categories. And that way you're still staying on topic, but you're just finding slightly different angles to use as an approach for your piece of content.
And maybe like a half dozen categories to get started?
That's what I recommend. 5 or 6 to get started. Try to not go over 10 or 12 total, because like I said, after that, it starts to just not be useful anymore.
Can you explain the concept of the content idea library?
So the content idea library actually is the solution to the blank page blues, right? So we all know this feeling. We have to create a piece of content. We've worked out our strategy. We've worked out our categories. So we know basically what we need to be writing about. But we're staring at this blank page, right? And sweat's beating on our upper lip. You know, it's a very stressful moment. So the idea library is basically there to provide you inspiration in those moments. And the idea library, I mean, you and I are marketing veterans, right? So you know about the morg file or the idea file, which is basically you would see an ad that somebody else had done that was well done. There was something about the image or the copy that you thought was good. You'd rip it out of the magazine and you'd stick it into a file folder. And the next time you had to create an ad for a client, you would pull out your morg file. I never did understand why they called it a morg file. I guess because it was like dead pages from a magazine. I don't know. But anyway, you pull open that morg file for inspiration. So this is basically creating an idea library of your own. And what I recommend is that people find a consistent place to keep these ideas. I personally have mine in Evernote. Some people love Moleskine notebooks, you know, they like to have, or just a spiral notebook, and they like to have something tactile. It doesn't really matter. The main thing is to have one single place where you note every blog post idea as it occurs to you. I love it when it's digital because I always have a phone with me no matter where I am, so I can always type something in. If I see something or think about something, I type it into the phone. And then what happens is the day that you sit down and you have that blank page in front of you, you can open your idea library and basically say, what do I feel like writing about today? Or what do I need to write about that will fit within my promotional schedule? Let me go to my library and I'll pull one of these ideas, and you just have a starting point. So you're not suffering from the blank page blues anymore because you have a place to start.
Now, before we go into these seven areas, I wanted to ask one other question. You talk about the importance of writing content for your customer's journey. Can you explain how you did it at Copyblogger, for instance, for what you call the new and the intermediate and the advanced customers? I think this is very helpful for folks that are still getting their arms around content marketing?
It's funny because I have heard the customer journey talked about in a lot of ways. And because this book is really tailored for people who are getting started with content marketing, I was always looking for ways to simplify things as much as possible. So this is it's very much like a simplified way to look at the customer journey. You can get more complex than this if you want. But what I like to think about is that people approach your topic with different levels of knowledge and possibly like exposure to the topic, right? So I put them into three categories: beginner, intermediate, and advanced. Beginners are really, they are so unfamiliar with with your topic that they're asking these very embarrassing questions like, what is online marketing? What is content marketing? Like, they've heard the term, but they seriously do not even know what it is. So if you can create content that answers that what is question, you can help to attract people who are at the very beginning of their journeys. They'll start to trust you. They'll appreciate that they were able to find the answer on your website instead of asking this embarrassing question that they feel like they should already know the answer to. They are at this wonderful beginning point in their journey. And if you can capture them at that point, then you can take them along and move them into these other steps that come further down the road. The next one is intermediate. Intermediate readers know your topic, so they understand it, but now they're trying to use it. So they're trying to put it to use. They love things like how-to content. They love things that involve tutorials. Anything that shows them how to implement your topic or what you teach or the service that you offer, anything that shows them how to make the most out of it and actually put it to use, is they're going to eat that up. They love that. And then your advanced readers, and this is a smaller group, there are more beginners, less intermediate, and even fewer advanced readers. But the advanced readers are really ready to kind of go pro on your topic. So they want to know how to make money with it. They want to know how to, really get the most out of the topic that you teach. So for example, they are great people to move into becoming your customers, because they're at a point where they understand the value and they're ready to really put it to work in their businesses or in their lives.
So let's move on and talk about these areas, but I want you to explain that this idea you had in the book where you said that you were a designer and you noticed patterns. And after you became much more of a writer, prolific writer, you noticed that all of the great content started to have these same seven patterns or components.
Yeah. I have to tell you, the way I noticed that, honestly, is I started writing guest posts for Copyblogger. And I knew I wanted to write for Copyblogger. They had a similar audience to the one I was writing for, but it was a much, much larger audience. So I started looking at the posts on their blog that did well and started kind of seeing these component parts. So then it was a matter of trying to reproduce those component parts in my own writing. And I hit this point early on where I remember saying to a friend of mine, like, I think I cracked the code on what makes a good copy blogger post. Like, I think I figured it out.
But you can only tell your friend. You didn't want to let too many people know.
Well, I wrote a book about it, so it's in the book now. Right, everybody can get access to it for under $20. So.
Right, right.
But yeah, I started seeing these component parts, and if every one of them worked well, the piece of content tended to do well. People responded to it. It got lots of shares. It tended to communicate its message really effectively. And once you understood those component parts, then it was just a matter of assembling it, basically.
Right. So let's talk about it. The first one is the compelling headline. And you say that your headline is like those chalkboard signs on the sidewalk in front of a store or restaurant. Explain what you mean there.
Well, what you want to do, so you and I are walking down a sidewalk and you're starting to get hungry. And we go by this restaurant that has one of those chalkboard signs and it says something funny or it features some food item that looks delicious. And you say, why don't we stop here? And that's what your headline needs to do. You are trying to appeal to people who have all sorts of input coming at them all day long on their social media platforms, in their inboxes, and you need to stop them in their tracks with your headline. A lot of people I work with, you know, they say, oh, I don't want to be pushy. I don't want to sound salesy. And the thing is, your headline really needs to sell your piece of content. So you kind of, I mean, you can be less pushy in the content itself, but you really need to intrigue people to get them to your piece of content so that they give it a chance. You're asking people to jump the digital divide from what they're doing right now to reading your content. It's a pretty big ask. So your headline needs to do that. It's super important.
I think you talked about it, just it really needs to be an advocate.
Yes. It does. It's like the little salesperson that's out there on social media trying to get people to click.
Now, you said your book is maybe more for beginners, but I've written hundreds of blog posts and I got a lot out of it, particularly the second part about the first sentence.
Yeah.
I was doing it slightly differently and I just kind of thought, oh, this seems to be working pretty well. But can you explain the importance of that first sentence?
Yeah, it's interesting about writing a book for beginners because secretly you do hope that you are helping, also helping people who are more advanced. So I'm very happy to hear that. So the thing.
Well,
the
I should interject. Oh, okay. In other words, I learn best by screwing things up and doing them wrong.
Oh, okay.
So when I read through this part, I was like, oh man, Douglas, come on. Kind of dropping the ball there.
Yeah, you and me both. So the thing about the first sentence is, okay, so you got people to stop in their tracks. You got them to click. They leaped across the digital divide and they're on your piece of content. And now you need to pull them down the page. And the first step in pulling them down the page is writing a first sentence that's compelling, that makes a promise, that sounds intriguing, that is not overly wordy or too long and drawn out. You need to pull them right in. So it's almost like, I mean, the job it has to do is almost as important as the headline, honestly, because they've now crossed the threshold and you need to keep them there so that they read your piece of content. So it did seem kind of ridiculous to write an entire chapter about one sentence, but it has a really important job to do.
It does. And I should mention that I don't think you talked about this in the book, but as I read through all these sections, it reminded me of a board game where you have to advance from one to the next in order to ultimately win.
Okay. I just got this major light bulb. If you could see me, there's a light bulb floating over my head. Because now I'm like, oh, I should make a content marketing board game. That's a great idea.
There you go. I'll buy it.
That's awesome.
Okay, so we're really only talking about two sentences at that part, but the third part is the introduction. And everybody, I think, has an idea of what an introduction might be, maybe from the English class, where the English teacher might have told them they weren't good writers. But can you explain?
If you're getting an idea from your English class, you're probably doing it wrong. But so the thing about within the context of a piece of content. And the thing is, none of us learned how to do content marketing in our English classes. It would be nice if they were teaching that now, because that's likely the most popular kind of writing that people will be doing going forward. But anyway, in a piece of content, an introduction is where you're going to get a commitment from the reader to read the entire piece of content. And this is not a small thing. I mean, you're asking them to give you 3, 4, 5 minutes of their lives. So it's important in the piece of content to have this introduction section that it doesn't have to be long, maybe 2 or 3 paragraphs, that kind of sells what they're going to be learning. And it foreshadows what you're going to be delivering without actually delivering it. The idea is not to, you know, hand it all over in the first few paragraphs. The idea is to give them a motivation for staying on the page and reading your piece of content.
Let's go to the next one, which is one that I'm afraid I wasn't using as well as I should have. And I wasn't even doing in this order because it's the subheads. And I was doing the subheads like as one of the very last things. But Can you explain how subheads actually help people consume your content?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about subheads, I actually recommend that you write the headline and the subheads on the first day of that process that I told you about, that you get those out of the way, because when you do that, you really have kind of a backbone that you can hang the rest of your content on. So it becomes like, I mean, I hate to call it an outline, because I think we all have PTSD from our English classes and having to outline papers, right? So, but that's basically what you're doing. When you have a headline and you have your subheads written, you basically have the outline of your post, and it kind of forces you to develop the premise behind your post before you actually sit down to write it. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't modify those subheads once you've actually written the first draft. You may go in and change them, but it does force you to think through how you're going to present your argument in the post from top to bottom.
And can you also explain the concept of what you call the dual readership path?
Yeah. So what happens nowadays is some people sit there and they read the post from the first word of the headline all the way down to the very end, start to finish. But I believe, and it has been shown in eye tracking studies, that more people tend to skim. Some people, that's all they do is skim. But a lot of people skim to kind of decide whether or not they're going to spend time with your post. So if you can create subheads that are compelling and that pull people down through your content and kind of serve as miniature headlines within the post, so they're almost like a headline for each section of your post, that re-engages people. Every few paragraphs, you're re-engaging them with another subhead that just delivers another couple of paragraphs and keeps them reading.
Well, let's move on to the main copy. And so we've got the headline, we've got the first sentence, introduction, subheads. As it relates to writing the main copy, why is speed so important?
Well, that goes back to that system I have to getting your content done over several days. So what I recommend is when people are creating a piece of content, the most difficult step by far that everyone I talk to, you know, confirms is just getting the first draft written. And I think a lot of it is because people are aiming for this first draft that is super polished. But honestly, the most important thing that you can do is just get the words out of your head so that you then have raw material to work with and edit and polish and make better, right? So what I recommend is when it comes time to writing that main copy, if you've done it the way I'm laying out in the book, you have a structure to plug your main copy into. So it's you're basically going in, you have your headline and your subheads. So you're going in and you're writing an introduction, you're filling in the copy under each subhead, and then you're summing it up at the end and writing a call to action, and then you're done. And I recommend that you just aim for speed. You just try to get those words out as quick as possible.
Yes, and you mentioned Anne Handley, who's been on the show. She wrote the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Everybody Writes. And you talked about how she said, you know, come up with a first draft quickly. And as I recall, I think in her book, she uses the expression, barf up a first draft.
Oh, I love it. That sounds like Anne. Honestly, I compare it to getting into a cold swimming pool that you're just like, I just got to get over to the other side so I can get out of here and start warming up again. I mean, you just want to dive in and get it over with, right?
Right. And when the potter gets ready to make a pot, they don't throw the clay on the wheel and suddenly have a pot. You just got to get it on there to get started, get the thing spinning around. So
exactly. Yeah. And there's time built into this process for polishing. There's plenty of time for polishing, but you have to have the raw material to work with.
One question you tackled here really well is the question that you probably get all the time. And I hear it. How long should your article be?
I mean, I have a philosophy around this, and other people think differently than I do, but I usually aim for about 1500 words. Now, sometimes it goes, that's kind of the average, right? So that means some posts are longer, some are a bit shorter. You probably don't want to go fewer than 700 words, I would say, for the sake of Google, Google tends to reward articles that are longer. So fewer than 700 words may not quite be enough to keep them happy. I mean, that's kind of a moving target, but that's usually, it's a rule of thumb that I would go by right now as we speak. But, and then 1500 words, I just like that number because it's a nice round number that's easy to remember, first of all, but it also tends to give you a post that somebody can read in 2 or 3 minutes. And I love that number. It's something, you know, people take their coffee break and read your piece of content. I know that there is an argument to be made for these very long, you know, what you might call the epic post. I think personally that people tend to bookmark those and don't actually read them a lot of times. Yes. Or they save them to Evernote. They're like, oh, this is great reference.
Yeah, or Pocket.
But they don't actually
yeah.
read it. So I like the 1,500 words because I think that's enough to expect people to actually read. It's
right.
also a little bit less daunting if you're starting out. The idea that you would write a post that's 1,500 words long is a lot less daunting than writing one that's 3,000.
Well, and as it relates to length and paragraphs, you say you need to make friends with your return key
yes.
on your keyboard. What are the benefits of short paragraphs that you've learned?
Well, I come from a publication design background. Most of my career was spent designing magazines and, you know, large printed newsletters that went out to like 700,000 people and all of this. So when you design things that are going to be printed on a large scale, the one thing that you discover very quickly is your client does not want you to use too much paper because paper costs money. It costs press time. It makes your mailing heavier. Everything, the costs go up on everything when you're printing something and it uses more pages. So I had to unlearn all of that when I went online because online we have this never-ending piece of paper. It's like this big, long roll of paper that never ends, right? And people read really differently online. If you don't put enough paragraph breaks, you end up presenting this thing that looks like a big wall of content that they just don't even want to get in there and decipher.
I've seen it on academic websites.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And there, I mean, that's because they're writing for that audience, and that audience might have the patience to sit there and read through that. But in general, for a piece of content marketing, you want to just, I mean, what I say is every time your thought turns a corner, hit your return key. So that may mean that you have an occasional one sentence paragraph, and that's totally fine.
So let's go to the last two, the summary. Again, I think it's like the introduction. People may think they know, you know, or maybe am I just rehashing it? But what is the purpose of the summary?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the summary is most really great pieces of content have some kind of summary, but it doesn't say summary on top of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's nobody is labeling it. So you may not even know it's there. But I did want to point it out because if you take the time to just very quickly kind of reminisce about the journey that you've taken the reader on, that gives them a great sense of satisfaction. It's like, I put the 3 minutes into reading this, and this is what I learned. And you know, this is the journey I've been on from start to finish. So it doesn't have to be long. It might even only be a sentence or a short paragraph. But if you can just say, you know, this is what we talked about, this is what we covered. Sometimes you can do it if it's a pretty complex topic that you're writing about. You can do a very short bulleted list. It's just to kind of remind people and reinforce what you've taught them.
Yeah, I love it. Reminisce about the journey. The last one is the call to action. And can you explain, you know, of course, you know, I think people who may be listening to this think, oh, a call to action, it's a button or it's a little, you know, block on the website. But explain what you mean by the call to action, the visual as well as the verbal.
Yeah, I think the call to action is the thing that makes your piece of content into a piece of content marketing. Because at the end, you're asking the reader to take action. That can be a very simple action. It might just be, let me know what you think down in the comments. So it could be a simple sentence with no button, no link, nothing. That's kind of one end of the spectrum. And then the other end of the spectrum is the full on, you know, button with bright text or, you know, lots of white space around it, that's actually getting someone to click on something that will take them somewhere else, or to take an action, or maybe to opt into an email list, something like that. And it does, there are two components. So there's the visual component and the verbal component. So if you are on that other end of the spectrum and you're asking them to take kind of a big action, then you want to make sure that that action kind of stands out. So you don't want to be shy, visually shy. You want to be kind of visually forward and make sure that you add some white space around your call to action. Use a button color that stands out from the rest of what's on the site. Maybe use like a subhead for a little headline over the call to action area. Whatever you need to do to get it to stand out from the rest of the page.
Because you want action.
Exactly. And you don't want people to pass it over without even seeing it.
Yeah. Last question about the book that I think is really important for the listener. Can you explain why people should focus on creating less but better content?
There's a lot of content out there. I mean, I think anyone listening knows this. You're competing with a lot of content that's already floating out there, and there are some pretty proficient people creating content nowadays. It's not a brand new industry the way it was maybe, you know, 8-9 years ago, right? So I believe that it's more important to aim to don't just make content, make something amazing. Because it's the amazing content that will really stand out from everything else that's out there. So you need to really aim to create quality. And if that means publishing a little bit less often, that's fine. Just, you know, get better at it, become more proficient. You'll become faster eventually. But aim for quality rather than just quantity. I think there was a time where quantity was rewarded, but I think those days are gone. I think you really have to go for quality nowadays.
So true. And I think there's still this muscle memory of, oh, wait, no, we got to do more. We just got to create content. It's like, no, actually, the internet's caught up with that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Google, I mean, I think the search engines have gotten smarter about it as well.
Well, they have. And also, it reminds me a bit of SEO, where in the past, there might have been a lot more sort of, you know, trickery and on-page tinkering, trying to fool the algorithms at the search engines. Well, that doesn't work anymore. You can get penalized for it now. But yet, I think there's a lot of people in the business world who, you know, maybe aren't aware of that. And they think that that's what SEO is.
Yes.
Is not creating quality content that people are actually searching for. It's the gaming of some algorithm. So, Pamela, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
The message that I want to leave with people is that content marketing can truly be a fun part of your week. And it can be sort of a creative part of your business life. That's where the Picasso story comes in. I think if you approach content as this creative thing that you can do that will also grow your business, you end up learning the basics, you just make content creation part of your weekly schedule, and you approach it as something, as really any creative act, that the more you do it, the better you will get at it. If you can do it that way, it'll be a fun part of your work week.
Yeah, I don't know how many people stick with drudgery.
Regardless, absolutely. Yeah,
of what it
absolutely.
Is.
Right.
Yeah. So what books have inspired your work and career?
So there's a book, it's probably not the first book you'll think of when now that you and I have had this conversation, but there is a book that I have been recommending to everyone since I first read it about a year and a half ago. It's called Predictable Success: Getting Your Organization on the Growth Track and Keeping It There. And it's written by a guy named Les McEwen, McCown. I'm not even sure how to pronounce
it. We'll make sure to put a link to it in the show notes.
Absolutely. It is such a great book to spell out the stages of growth that just about every business goes through. But what I think is so fascinating is he gives those stages names and explains what happens in each one and spells out what it means to go from the beginning stages to the best stage, and then maybe to go past that to sort of overshoot and then find your way back. So it's a little hard to explain, but it is fascinating. And if you're part of any organization that's in the middle of growth, I think you'll find it so helpful. Even just to have labels for some of what you're experiencing, I think you'll find it fascinating.
Yeah, and I was not familiar with that one. So you win the prize.
Good.
And I'm definitely going to look that one up.
Well, it's not a marketing book. That's the thing. It's really about organizational growth. So that's what I mean by it's probably not the book that you would think I would talk about. But I found it fascinating, and I've recommended it to lots of business owners who've enjoyed it.
Well, and for the record, I asked what books have inspired your working career. So it wasn't just a marketing or a sales book. There are some very interesting answers just like that one that I've had in previous episodes. I want to mention two that you mentioned on page 177. That was the page before you start talking about Jim. You said this one paragraph, you said, which books to read next? And they've both been on the Marketing Book Podcast. And I stood up and saluted when I read this. I was so excited. One of them is Content Chemistry, an illustrated handbook for content marketing by Andy Crestatina. A fantastic book. And I think it's out in its fourth edition now.
It is an amazing book. I think, you know, it may not be the first book you want to pick up if you're interested in content marketing, because there's just so much there. It's such a wonderful book. I love it. And the illustrations are fantastic.
Yes. It's laid out like a high school chemistry book. And I think the first part is called lecture and the second half is called lab.
Yeah.
It was fun for anyone who's taking chemistry, which is, I guess, most folks. The other one is the one we mentioned, Everybody Writes, Your Go-To Guide for Creating Ridiculously Good Content by Ann Hanley. She was one of the very first guests on the podcast. And Ed, I've recommended that so many times to lots of people. Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or looking forward to reading?
I'm actually listening to Persuasion, which is the Robert Cialdini book. Listening to that on audiobook. That's fascinating. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah. He was on the podcast.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Oh, I almost thought, boy, now that I've interviewed him, I can almost stop this podcast. But what a great book. His first one, and he'd written by himself in 30 years since the first book, which was Persuasion, The Psychology of Influence. Just amazing. That's great. That's a highly recommended. So, Pamela, how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
The best place to learn more about the book we just talked about is if they go to mastercontentmarketing.com. That will actually redirect them to a page that's on my website, Big Brand System. And it's like a landing page for the book. It gives a little bit more information, and it also has links to all the major stores where you can find it. It's available in print. It's also available for iPad and Kindle, and it's available on audiobook. I've sold quite a few audiobooks. I narrated it myself.
Oh, terrific.
Well, I had done a podcast around the creation of the book, so I wanted to go ahead and narrate it just to go through the whole experience. And I figured people have heard me talk about this book for months now. So,
was that what you did with Jeff Goins?
Yes. Okay. Zero to Book FM.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, we'll make sure to include a link to that, because you talk about how, you know, if you want to learn about how the book, it almost reminded me of the, you know, you buy a DVD about a movie and then they include a section on how they made the movie.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, that's what that last section of the book is all about.
Right. Well, the name of the book is Master Content Marketing, A Simple Strategy to Cure the Blank Page Blues and Attract a Profitable Audience. The author is Pamela Wilson. Pamela, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much, Douglas. This was really fun. I appreciate it.
And that closes the book on episode 107 of the Marketing Book Podcast. But please don't let the end of this episode be the end of what you can learn about modern marketing. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for links to all the things we talked about in this interview and free marketing guides from my agency. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. And if you're looking for a book recommendation or have a question or guest suggestions, here's how to get in touch. Just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and leave a message, or connect with me on LinkedIn. My name again is Douglas Burdett, or send me a tweet at my Twitter handle, marketingbook. I look forward to hearing from you. And please join us next time as we welcome Tim Sanders to the show to talk about his book, Deal Storming, The Secret Weapon That Can Solve Your Toughest Sales Challenges. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.